If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Vox Markets Podcast on Friday, the 5th of July, 2019. On the podcast today, I chat to Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now author of The Crypto Trader. And Glenn provides some insight into the world of cryptocurrency trading this week. Also on the podcast, Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talks about the following stocks: Hurricane Energy, HUR, Kainos Group, KNOS, and Carnival for income hunters. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs today.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is top crypto trader and author of The Crypto Trader, Glenn Goodman. You're right, Glenn.
Yes, I am better than all right, actually.
How is book sales going? And am I still getting a cut?
Yeah, you can have 0.0001%. How's that for a deal?
I'm about to get one Bitcoin for every time you say, well, how much is a Bitcoin? $11,000, isn't it?
As we speak, it's about $11,750. And the last week or so has been crazy in the world of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. OM goodness, Justin. Yeah. OM goodness. That's what the young crypto bros say these days. OM goodness, it's been wild over the past week or so. Basically, what we saw the price do, I mean, we've talked in previous weeks about how the price of Bitcoin was rocketing, but it went all the way up to $14,000. If you imagine the craziest, your sort of favorite crazy wild AIM share, right? Imagine an AIM share that doubles and then doubles again within the space of a few months and then has a correction of 30%. Now, the thing with AIM shares is that obviously because of the lack of liquidity in some of these small companies, you often have quite large spreads. So you might be tempted, for example, even with a share that doubles and then doubles again in the space of a few months, if you think it's going to have a 30% correction or so, you might be tempted to hold on to it because the spreads are so large often with the small shares that it doesn't make financial sense necessarily to be trading in and out of them. Yeah. But if you imagine that, when you've got Bitcoin, what you've got is a kind of an AIM share which has that kind of insane volatility, but at the same time has a tiny, tiny spread, the kind of spread that's smaller than the biggest shares in the world. So, you know, you buy at, say, 10,001. Yeah, very, very liquid. So, for example, at $11,750, I'm looking at a spread of approximately 50 cents. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, as I say, the Bitcoin ramped up to $14,000 and then started to correct. Now, if I was holding that as a share, I would probably hold on during the correction thinking, well, this is a long-term uptrend, let's not worry about that. But because I have the option to trade in and out very, very cheaply, when it got to about 14,000 and started to falter and I saw the sort of classic signs of a serious correction start to begin, I thought, okay, I'm going to sell this and I'm going to go short because there are various platforms on which you can go short on Bitcoin and a handful of other cryptocurrencies. So I started shorting. I started making loads of money because the price fell all the way from 14,000 at its bottom down to about 9,750 just in the space of a few days. Mm-hmm. So a massive, massive correction. And then the correction started to correct. I saw the signs that the correction was probably ending and it was starting to go back up. So then I went long again and I made more money on the long side. So I am feeling...
You are rolling in it, Claire. That's why he's a book writer. That's why you can read how he does this. So when you look at the chart here, what indicators do you use on the chart for that?
I'm sort of at the
or
stage
just,
now.
Or do you just use just intuition?
I'm going to say at this point in after
Jedi
20
Greg.
Years of trading, yeah, it's more Jedi than it is kind of solid indicators. Now, in my book, obviously, I go over all the very standard and basic technical trading techniques that I use. I only use the ones that are proven to work through empirical evidence and lots of academic studies. I think we've talked about this in the past. But now I'm kind of at the stage where I recognize those patterns without having to actually draw the lines on the charts physically. But nonetheless, I'm still sort of using the same principles. So for example, when the price got to its peak at about 14,000 and started to falter, it started to form what you and I know as a head and shoulders pattern, for example.
What time frame on the chart? You're looking at in a minute, 5 minute time frames? I'm an investor, not a trader, so I look at long term. Yeah. I look at a daily time frame on my charts. What time frame are you looking in?
Well, the thing is, for everything else in the world, when I'm doing shares or futures, commodities, anything, I use daily charts. Because whilst I might not be an investor, in inverted commas, more of a trader, nonetheless, I still recognize and talk a lot in my book about how it's generally more profitable to trade longer time frames, mainly because of the lack of dealing costs. But with Bitcoin, at the moment, you just can't do that. If you look on a daily chart, you're not going to see very much of use because things move so quickly. So I was using mainly an hourly chart in order to sort of form my opinion of whether we'd reached a top or not, and conversely, yesterday, whether we'd reached a bottom. And in both cases, I concluded that we had, as I say, just using very, very standard technical trading techniques, things like moving averages and the triangle shapes and head and shoulder shapes sort of in the charts themselves. I go into a lot more detail in the book, but, you know, very kind of standard stuff is all you need to analyze most cryptocurrencies.
I don't know if you saw this today. I saw this on the BBC. It was yesterday, actually, released it. And I think this energy is down to the fevered imagination of traders. But Bitcoin uses more energy than the whole of Switzerland. A new online tool from the University of Cambridge shows to make it easy to have a cryptocurrency network. Energy usage. So what is this? Are people just trading it? How does that currently tool, the Bitcoin, uses around 7 gigawatts of electricity, equal to 0.21% of the world's supply. That's unbelievable. How can Bitcoin use that? That's inefficient, isn't it?
You would think so, wouldn't you? The energy is being used in the mining of the Bitcoin. Ironically, even though there's no actual physical mining going on, and the word mining is a metaphor, nonetheless, it probably uses more energy than the actual mining industry.
This is as much power as will be generated by 7 Dungeness nuclear power plants at once.
Yes.
That's phenomenal.
So it is. It's all done. It's all processing power, basically. When you mine Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency, what you're basically doing is forcing a very, very powerful computer to perform complex mathematical operations, to basically try and solve very complex maths problems. And the powerful computers, every time they solve one of these complex problems, then Bitcoins are effectively created through that process. It's a very, very clever way of doing it because it allows... I mean, one of the key things about Bitcoin is the idea is that the numbers of Bitcoins are limited. The supply is very, very limited. So it's artificially creating very limited supply, which in theory should stop there ever being sort of hyperinflation of currencies or just random printing of currencies like central banks do all the time. You know, that was one of the main motivations behind Bitcoin, was that it would be a currency that governments can mess around with and hyperinflate or quantitative ease their way out of problems. But as you say, there is this big problem, which is that the mining of it uses enormous amounts of electricity, so it's not exactly an environmentally friendly way of going about things. Other newer cryptocurrencies have tried to find ways around that by making the mining process one that doesn't involve utilizing enormous amounts of energy and extremely expensive computers.
Did you see that argument? Did you see the argument? I don't know if you're aware of the argument between Dr. Doom, is it? I think Noria Rubini, he's a professor.
Yeah.
Do you know what? People say he predicted, which is ridiculous, really. People say he predicted the financial crash. He didn't. He didn't, essentially. He predicts a crash every year, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know?
And exactly. That's why they call him Dr. Doom.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's like the old analogy of a wrong clock. It's right twice a day. So he's going to get it right sooner or later. But there's a big argument between him. I don't know, some other guy, they did a big interview, and he was saying...
Yes, Arthur Hayes, the founder of an exchange that I sometimes use, actually, is called BitMEX. It's one of the biggest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world, where you can trade Bitcoin futures contracts using ridiculous amounts of leverage. He's not a dodgy character. He's a sort of industry, a long industry character, this guy, Arthur Hayes. But his platform is not regulated in the UK. And I should give warnings to your listeners here. Before you venture onto BitMEX, you really don't want to be an amateur on BitMEX. You want to be quite an experienced trader if you're going to use leveraged futures contracts like that.
Yeah. Talking about that, you mentioned, do you talk about the FCA? What's happening there with the FCA?
Oh, yeah. The FCA has made an announcement that they would like to ban complex cryptocurrency products. Now, this does not mean banning Bitcoin or banning cryptocurrencies as such, or the buying or selling of them. But it does want to ban, CFDs, like you get on IG Index or CMC Markets or one of those kind of platforms where you trade CFDs, which are derivatives of the normal product. So, you know, say instead of trading a share, you're trading a derivative based on the price of that share. So to all intents and purposes to people, it looks like they're just trading normal shares, but usually they'd be using leverage. That's the main difference. So they're kind of complex products. They're often more risky products as a result. Now, you can trade Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies on these platforms. And now the FCA is saying, we don't think it's safe for retail customers to trade those things because of their extreme volatility, the difficulty in valuing them using fundamental methods, which is also true. It's difficult to value them, and consumers' patchy understanding of what they're buying, and also the increased risk of financial crime. So the FCA has kind of thrown everything into the mix there, you know, every accusation they can think of at the cryptocurrency CFDs. They've already limited the leverage on them to just 2x the value of the original product, which is, you know, quite low leverage historically, but now they want to actually ban the CFDs for cryptocurrencies altogether. I don't think it's a good idea. Why? Because there are too many options outside of the UK, like BitMEX and loads of other cryptocurrency exchanges. The most popular cryptocurrency exchanges in the world are all unregulated or lightly regulated, based in jurisdictions outside the UK. Loads of people in the UK already use these things. So if you start banning the CFDs on the highly regulated platforms like IG and CMC, you're just going to push people to the unregulated platforms. I'm not sure that's a good thing.
Yeah, and do you know what? It's even I just find, you know, the best way to learn is lose. That's what I find about investing. No, you can nanny people all you want, but it's like, you know, a kid will learn to climb a climbing frame in the playground. If he falls down, he realizes, right, he's got a grip on a harder next time. That's it, you know. You've got to learn to a certain extent. And you know, if you're going to chuck all your savings into one sort of cryptocurrency, then you've got to have the common sense and intelligence to understand you could lose it all, full stop. And
exactly.
How much can we hold hands, Stabil? You can't hold hands all the time, Stabil. You know, they've got to learn. That's all.
Learning. No, I agree with you. Instead of banning the products, they should be telling people, buy Clay Goodman's book, or buy, they're not going to say that, but, you know, buy or read this information that we've given you. Say the FCA could issue information, not just about cryptocurrencies themselves, but about how to trade in a sensible, diversified way. You know, I've just talked about how I've been making loads of money trading crazy Bitcoin volatility, but I haven't been risking my life savings. You know, even if I'd lost all the money that I put up over the past week, it wouldn't have touched my actual financial status because...
You're a billionaire.
But because I talk about it in my book, how to manage risk.
Because I am rolling in it.
Choose, you know, the right sizes for your... Look, even if I was poor and hardly had any money. In fact, some of my followers and readers of my book have got very little money, and I advise them about how to trade very, very small amounts, how to risk small amounts on each position in order to keep their risk at a reasonable level so that they don't lose the very small amount of money that they have. So there are ways of doing it sensibly, and the FCA should be teaching people about this rather than, as you quite rightly point out, trying to ban things when people should be learning from them.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, just going back to Dr. Doom and Nouriel Roubini, this is what he says. Oh, yeah. He says on his Twitter account, this is what the BBC brought, said, they say, another crypto haze scam. He didn't allow the blockchain conference to record our debate and beam it live. He controls the only recording of it and will only release heavily edited highlights. I destroyed Crypto Haze in the debate and he is hiding. And in capitals, release the tape, you coward. So there we are. So he's quite impressed. For an economics professor, he's quite a self-promoter, isn't he?
It's amazing. It's like these two guys were just having a debate, and yet it's ended up as like this flame war between two intellectuals, two rich intellectuals, and they're arguing like a couple of school kids. It is astonishing.
During the financial crisis, I used to pop up on financial channels like Bloomberg or CNBC. And I used to hate him because I'm a long investor. You know? I don't go short or anything like that. I'm for, you know, the upside. And he's going, no, we're going to see a crash again. It's going to go down further. I said, shut up, you fool. You got on my nerves. It's almost like when we're having a bad time in the markets, the media seek out, you know, negative naysayers. You know, they want it. It's all sensationalized, the entire thing. Everything's going to crash through the floor. We're all going to be eating dust off the floor. That's the kind of thing you're saying, you know? And he says this every week. And so he's not right. He's more wrong than he's right.
Exactly. And it's not good enough to just then, when he is right, which in however many years' time we eventually do have a recession, as you say, they'll drag him out, they'll wheel him out onto the TV and go, you predicted this recession again. And in the phrase that you used earlier, even a stop clock is right twice a day. It's just not good enough. Yeah. And I think there are far too many pundits particularly on financial news channels who get away with murder, just making ridiculous predictions that they're completely wrong, and then it's just forgotten about the next time that they're on, and they're treated like a soothsayer all over again.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Glenn, thanks. Don't forget to buy Glenn's book, because I get 0.0000000 Bitcoin per sale.
An infinitesimally small amount of Bitcoin for you.
Marvellous. Glenn, we'll catch up next week, fella. Thanks very much.
Good stuff.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You're right, Russ.
Very well, Justin. How are you?
Yes, good, thanks.
You know, good.
I'm off next week, but it's nice. We've just both been talking about Sports Day, which it's a bit of trepidation, anxiety, because it builds up inside me, because all my sons do well, and they've got friends who they're all quite, him and his mates are all quite sporty, the oldest one, you know, and so they're very competitive.
No, our kids are very competitive, and they've got lots of competitive, and unfortunately our lad fell at the final hurdle for the second year in a row. Poor lad. Scraped knees, bruised pride, and all that, poor fella. So, but not to worry. And his house didn't win either. But we calmed him down, and he did all right in the standing jump and the sprint and the shot put. So he sort of got round. He came round in the end. So.
Yeah, that's good. I was just saying, in year one, my eldest son won the sprint, and then a couple of boys joined in year two and three, quite sporty as well, and turned out to be his best friends. But they took it off him in year two and three.
Yeah,
and then
year
four now, he won it. Yeah, and I thought, yes, because he did
good.
Really well. And it's funny, I was on the finish line with my camera, videoing it, you know? And it was very close to him and this other boy, his friend of his. And I was standing next to the friend's father. And he was convinced his son did it. And I sort of got my phone, after the video, I looked at it on slow motion. I scrolled it and I said, sorry, Dave, this is his son. Sorry, Dave, I think my son's got it, fella. And you could see, because he honestly thought his son had it. And then they announced, they said, Fred, wait, come first. Like,
it's
really competitive. It's, I had to almost rein my enthusiasm in because I didn't want to rub it in his face, you know.
You've got to be a good winner as well as a good loser. So it's very important.
Exactly. His son won last year, and let's be honest, he's very fast. He's very sporty. So it's nice of Fred to do well. But yes, anyway, let's not get too carried away. Let's get into some stocks here. This is not a sports day podcast.
It's not worldwide, ITV's World of Sport or Grandstand, whatever it is, or whatever they used to be. No. Yeah. So Hurricane we've looked at before. Yeah. Kynos we haven't, and Carnival we haven't. And Carnival's the one for income.
Yeah, okay. Hurricane haven't had some good results, have they, update?
No, well, June was looking great. Yeah. They actually had first production from Lancaster, the first time in UK waters that there's been oil extracted from these fractured basement reservoirs. I know it's been done in Vietnam, in Libya, and the Yemen, but it was the first time in the UK that any oil producer managed to extract rock from the cracks between these, extract oil or hydrocarbons from these rocks that have been pushed up at the bottom of the sea and fractured. So that was a massive breakthrough in the Lancaster field. Share price shot up, and you think, happy days, here we go. And then just 4 weeks later, on the Warwick field, where they've actually done a farm out with Spirit Energy, which I think is backed by Centrica from memory, the first well there, nowhere near as much joy, plugged, abandoned, move on to the next one, and the share price rattled all the way back to 44p. So from when we first looked at it, 2.5 years ago, whatever it is, we're not actually in the red, but that obviously pretty much wiped out most of the paper profits that we had. And it's going to be one of those stocks, you're either going to love it or you're going to loathe it. You know, lots of people I know don't play in anything that's pre-profit, let alone pre-revenue. I mean, this company is now should be generating revenues because it's got first oil coming out. In theory, it's going to make a profit in 2020. And if that's the case, and start generating, you know, then people may start to change their opinions if they don't like it at the minute. But, you know, you've had one well plug, you've had one well succeed. It's either going to be for you and it's not. And it's high risk, high return stuff. So it's certainly not for widows and orphans. But if you're a driller digger type of fan, then this is one of the things that will be on your radar, because it is either going to be very, very good or, you know, the alternative.
Yeah, but if you think profit, how much? Because they're valued now at close to 900 million.
800, so, not, yeah, 850, yeah. I think. Yeah. Yeah.
So, how is that going to stack up?
Very, very big things. The farm out there they did with Spirit was, I think, $300 million. So somebody clearly thinks that there's some value there. So you either get the value through farm outs, or you get the value through producing the stuff, and, you know, or somewhere in between the two. That my record, as people will know, with these things is generally not very good. I think I flagged this one just because it is the first of its kind and it could be really, really interesting. But again, it's one of those things that's probably in the real sex, drugs and violence portion of your portfolio, tucked away in the corner, whereby if it does all go completely wrong, it's not going to do much damage. But if it goes well, it will make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, if I was going for, you know, all, I know they've got about a billion barrels in resources there, but that's not to say they can produce anywhere near that. But I'd go for something smaller cap, I think, because I don't see how much upside they can get from this, from that valuation already.
Well, that's, you know, yeah.
There we are.
Well, anyway. I guess the farm out was the first step there. But you either like these or you don't. And it's one that we've looked at before, and there had been some big news, so it was worth looking at again.
Yeah, okay. Hurricane, next one is Kainos. What's that then?
Kainos, yeah. It's actually a FTSE 250 company, 750 million cap, Belfast-based, and it's an IT company, and it does three things. Helps companies transition to a digital world, and in fact, actually, it's doing a huge amount of work for the UK government right now on digitization, implementing and testing of enterprise management tools. And then the third business is it provides records management systems for the NHS. Now, the latter one, as you can probably imagine, isn't going that quickly at the moment, and that has been a bit of a drag. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been looking at this one since the May full year numbers, and they beat easily revenues of 150 million, pre-tax profit of 23. They were both up more than 50% year on year. Net cash balance sheet, 10% of sales as a software as a service. It pays a dividend. But ultimately, it was the earnings beat that first brought it up to me, and I've been doing some work on it since. And it's clearly one of those stocks that is for momentum jockeys, because the value people won't play. It's on more than 30 times earnings. But clearly, the caveat to that is, if they keep beating earnings by as much as they have done over the last couple of years, it won't be on 30-odd times earnings for very long. And that's when the multiple will start to come down, so long as the growth comes through. So at the moment, it looks to be in a very sweet spot. Terrific earnings momentum. So again, one for the Momo jockeys, not necessarily one for the investment hunt seeker, the value seeker.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kainos doesn't sound like it's from Belfast, but it comes from the...
Not in the slightest.
No, the ancient Greek word meaning new or fresh. There we are.
There you are. Well, there we go. Transition to digital. That's, I guess, where that's come from.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. Okay, and the income play. What are we going for with Carnival?
Carnival. And this is an interesting one because it's had two profit warnings this year, and I bet you're going to tell me the chart looks awful because it basically goes from top left to bottom right.
Let's have a look. So let's hope it's not like one of their cruisers on a rough seas.
Well, yeah. Well, have a look.
CCL is the ticker. Let's have a look.
CCL is the ticker. It looks like a set of steps leading down, doesn't it?
Do you know what? It does, exactly. It's gone from 52 quid down to 34 quid. And every time you think it's going to make a recovery, it doesn't. It just goes lower. I wouldn't know where to call.
Correct.
Do you know what? In fact, let's have a look here. Scrolling out 2017. Well, there is. We're coming into a bit of support here at 35 quid. So maybe, who knows? It may hold here. You know, but yes,
there you go.
If that was a wave, you wouldn't go over that in a cruise liner. That's a big wave.
It'd be frightening.
Down.
I mean, it's a long-term share price, lad. It's had two profit warnings this year. First one blamed fuel and foreign exchange movements. Well, that's just kind of the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. The second one blamed problems with one particular ship's engines. And the latest American travel restrictions to Cuba, which have done some damage. Now, none of those affect the company's long-term business position, its competitive position, or its strategy. They're all sort of things that could happen. But over the last two or three years, as you've been you've just flagged, it's come down from the mid-50s to the mid-30s. It's come down from 19 times earnings to 10, and it's now got a 4.5% dividend yield as a result, more than twice covered by earnings. Cash gen business is even buying back stock. So you've had some transitory issues here for absolutely certain. I think the long term side is just people worrying about the global economy. Will people stop spending as much on leisure activity? And we will see, because it is a cyclical business. But when this business goes well, it's basically an oligopoly. You've got Carnival, Royal Caribbean and Norwegian Cruises pretty much bossing it with Saga kind of around there in the corner. They've done great work in refreshing their fleet over the last 5 years. They've got 17 new ships coming, so the new ships are going to be more fuel efficient, all singing, all dancing. So the quality of the business has improved, and you've had these transitory problems that have hit the shares hard this year to the point whereby the valuation is pretty lowly, the yield is pretty attractive, and yes, it's cyclical. So if there is a global recession coming, and we've discussed it before, the bond markets still think there might be, even if the equity markets don't care, then this one might not perform, but at least the yield for the moment looks pretty fair set, and now it's more than 4% because of the share price slide. That kind of comes up on the income radar for me.
Do you know what? In this chart, every sort of equally spaced are these big red bars down days, And I'm looking close. Yep. I thought, okay, there's one in June, there's one in March, there's one in December, there's one
that's
in September.
Every time they report, that's every time.
Every quarter, every quarter they've just dropped off the chart. So it's almost like they're disappointed in every update they've done. Yep. So sooner or later, hopefully, expectations will be so low
that's the thing. So, and I think with a value on a PE of 10, you're taking a lot less risk than you were on a PE of 19.
Yes, exactly. Okay, CCL is Carnival. Maybe we should check out what they've got to offer there, Russ, and just jump on a cruise.
I'm not a cruise kind of guy myself, but I might have a poke around, see what they say.
No, I'm not, but I often fancy... Well, I live near Southampton, so when we're driving to town there, we often see these massive... Mm-hmm. The size of cities, these little things,
Size of towns. We saw them coming into Dubrovnik a couple of years ago. They're absolutely... Yeah. As soon as we saw them turn up, we cleared off because we knew the whole town was going to be swamped.
Yeah, yeah. And part of me is curious to see, what's on them. But everything's on them, I suppose. But I just genuinely think I wouldn't like to have close proximity with so many people, you can't get away from them, can you, really? So
that's the thing, yeah.
Unless you lock yourself in the cabin.
You're going where you're told you're going. We're going to here, we're going to there, and that's, So some people obviously love it, and some people don't. But it's not my thing necessarily, but clearly lots of people are very pleased to...
Yeah, well, let's see if
you've... To be in these giant floating hotels.
Yeah, let's see if you've picked the bottom here, Russ, because there could be some support here. There may be a bit of support.
See what happens.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. And it's gone through some rough peaks and troughs there. Steady as she goes now, hopefully. Marvellous stuff. Have a nice weekend, Russ.
Pleasure. Take care.
Okay, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Gulf Keystone Petroleum, dividend payment. At four, Management Resource Solutions, notice of requisition of general meeting. At three, EVR Holdings, Melody VR, licenses content to Facebook. That's content to Facebook. At two, Live Company Group, trading statement. That's LVCG. And number one, most liked on S, came from ARC Minerals. That's ARCM, ticker. I don't know why I'm speaking so slowly. In fact, John Mayer mentioned those in the podcast yesterday. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.